Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 11th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great, great. Good to have you here. So, D.R., you know, life marches on. As the weather gets warmer, things are going to continue to change. I understand there was a report from the White House that had some interesting information this week.
Yes, it's a report known as the Climate and Health Assessment, which has been 3 years in the making, and according to MediaMatters.org, is the result of research by approximately 100 health and science experts in 8 federal agencies, and it basically chronicles the extreme level of risk to public health if we don't take immediate action now to curb carbon pollution. Mm-hmm. Quoting again from Media Matters, quote, "These threats include some of the most severe effects of global warming, such as increased incidence of death from extreme heat waves and worsened air quality, and as well as some less discussed impacts, including the potential for carbon pollution to make our food crops less nutritious, and even the toll that our weather-related disasters can take on our mental health," unquote. Mm-hmm. And they also go on to discuss how climate change will increase the risks of suffering from various diseases and illnesses such as Lyme disease and West Nile virus and waterborne illnesses. Wow. It was a very, very comprehensive report. Basically, in discussing the report, John Holdren, the White House science advisor, made note of the idea that in many respects it will make it impossible for people to work outside, that the heat will simply become too unbearable for people who must work outdoors to do so without being at risk of heat stroke and potentially death.
Well, I remember there was a report a couple months ago about something called the wet bulb temperature, which is a way of measuring temperature that's kind of wrapped up inside of the thermometer is wrapped up inside of a wet cloth or something. But that is the highest temperature that a human can work at. And that they said within 100 years, places like, you know, Abu Dhabi are going to be above that temperature, which is literally lethal no matter how healthy you are. It's like going into a sauna of 150 degrees and trying to live there, right? What I guess the report is saying is that, while it may not be so extreme here in the U.S., I mean, there's a lot of people going to be subject to health risks from the heat, if nothing else, right?
Exactly. The Climate Central notes that one of the findings of the study is that extreme heat will likely kill 27,000 Americans a year by 2100. And the Miami Herald also noted that as part of this study and in a follow-up to this study, the White House is scheduled to launch a website later this month with advice for healthcare facilities for how to deal with the effects of climate change. So it is a comprehensive initiative, obviously, basically reemphasizing the importance of the Paris climate deal and the full implementation thereof, because obviously if you don't take the immediate drastic steps necessary, you're going to have a lot of people basically not live to see their kids grow old, quite frankly. That's a very daunting prospect.
I mean, but I think that it bears discussion. I mean, you say that there's the health risks from excess heat, and it's easy to gloss over them, but I mean, air quality being one of them, and people have heard of smog, right? And smog is this thing that everyone associates, at least I associate with, you know, Southern California. And what happens is the exhaust from automobiles connects up with, basically in the heat, it chemically changes and becomes stuff that triggers asthma attacks in children. Right? Mm-hmm. So that as the air gets warmer and more places are hotter, the heat drives this chemical reaction of the exhaust from cars, which is a big trigger for asthma. And so that's just one probably of many air quality impacts to health. But the asthma impact of global warming is real and been well noted in a bunch of places, right? That this is just, so I mean, just, I guess what I'm thinking is that you want to put a specific, I don't know, image or if you say there's health risk, you say, okay, what does that mean, right? Number one, you can't be outside because you'll drop dead. It's too hot. Number two, the air chemically is changed because it's so hot and you trigger asthma attacks. I think it's fascinating that the food is less nutritious, right? I mean, that it's just too hot, and so your kale is no longer as kaley as it is now. And I mean, I read these things that say that as the temperature goes up, the bees – you know, you lose the bees, and the bees are what's the word? Making all the crops go out in Central California, right? If you have no bees, you don't have any. And of course, I mean, we've talked at great length about this sort of mosquito-borne diseases that come. I mean, it's pretty nasty.
When we discuss the food crop issue, you know, how many times have we heard all that nonsense about CO2 being plant food? And whenever I hear that, I always say, you know, what happens when you overeat? You know, it's like people don't seem to put that.
The only thing that what I've seen is that rice does not. I can't even think of the word. You know, in when the weather's too hot. Even a few degrees, you lose yield on the rice plant, right? So as the temperature goes up, the plants can't handle it. Right?
Which could lead to mass starvation, because if you think of all the countries that are dependent upon rice as a staple of their diet, you know, if you ruin the rice, that's not too nice, now, is it?
And if you don't have food, you got a health problem, right? But, I mean, it's interesting that this – so tell me, DR, you mentioned before, I mean, this is now the third week in a row where we have this heavy-duty you know, report that drops like a bomb, and probably most people will ignore it. But you had the Hansen report that talked about, you know, a trigger mechanism for the likelihood of a trigger mechanism to stop the Gulf Stream is much more likely and coming much faster, that is to say, in a few decades. Then last week we had a report from the UMass guys talking about the Arctic melting and raising sea levels by 6 feet within 50 years, which is incredible when you start putting it together. And now we have this another heavy duty report on health, right?
Yes.
I mean, what should people think? how do you process that? I mean, I haven't read the reports, and then I'd probably get them and put them on break my bookshelf because they're so heavy but man, that's real stuff, right?
Well, I think one immediate takeaway, and this goes to something Media Matters raised, is that, you know, there needs to be much more discussion, especially in the television press, television and cable press, about the importance of this issue. Media Matters noted that the Washington Post, the New York Times, USA Today, The Guardian, Time Magazine, and the AP did cover the White House report, but when it comes to your cable and broadcast, the TV news networks and the cable networks, not so much. And the problem is, you know, as I've said before, this is an issue that's going to trump all other issues. So, you know, and we could be cruising for a bruising if we don't do anything to curb
emissions. But there's many more important. There's pictures to be put up. I mean, there's tweets that we have to check in on. Yes, well,
we need to make sure that whoever becomes the whoever takes over for Obama is indeed qualified to deal with this issue. Put it that way.
I think I will just put that there. But anyway, I think it's been quite a succession of rather important reports that people will probably. I think what's going to happen is those reports will be digested by the cognoscente and somehow put into more accessible language, right? So we'll probably be seeing those kinds of things filtering out in climate hawk related communications. So you don't necessarily have to read the original, as they say, but you will eventually all get it. So there you go, DR. Now, on the other hand, we have one of Massachusetts's favorite sons who's gone. Local boy makes good, right? John Kerry
Yes.
went off and became Secretary of State, among other things. He, I guess, gave a speech this past week, right? Did
Yes,
you?
it was.
Were you there, DR, or did you just watch it on watch it on Netflix?
I wasn't there, but it was an extraordinary 32-minute speech that he gave to Bloomberg New Energy Finance, in which he basically said that, you know, that clean energy is, as the Huffington Post notes, quote, the biggest economic opportunity the world has ever seen, Kerry has said. He said it can potentially produce trillions of dollars in wealth and billions of potential customers in terms of job creation. There's nothing that compares to it. And he basically said that, you know, government policies can set the parameters for this economic clean energy growth, but the private sector will have to take the lead and can take the lead so long as those parameters are in place. And basically, you know, as he said, you know, why would you pass up this opportunity that you know, it was basically touching upon some of the themes that Ed Markey has made, that, you know, when you look about the ingenuity that transitioned us from, you know, rotary phones to the iPhone, clean energy can lead a similar transition and create millions of jobs and so much wealth in the process. So when we talk about, you know, in terms of the discussion about job creators, clean energy is the greatest job creator you can think of. So why not pursue that opportunity? It was an extraordinary speech, and basically, as according to Grist, it echoes points that Al Gore has made and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley has made about the economic boom that could be unleashed by going all in on clean energy.
So tell me, when Kerry, do you remember when Kerry referred to sort of, you know, parameters of government, right, policy parameters? You know, translate that. What does that mean in the human speak? Is that a carbon tax, or is it? What was he referring to?
I think he was generally referring to, in terms of what governments will pursue as a means of being in accord and means of complying with the terms of the Paris Climate Agreement. So obviously, individual countries they may embrace carbon pricing or cap and trade systems or direct government or direct tax inducements in terms of pursuing clean energy, but basically the theme was that in order to comply with the terms and conditions of the Paris Climate Agreement, governments around the world are going to set these parameters, set these sort of goals and timetables, and then the private sector is going to recognize it as a challenge and an economic boost, and basically go all in on it. And he basically said, you know, there's still going to be voices of resistance, but as it becomes clearer the amount of wealth that lies in clean energy, those voices of resistance will be muted. It was just a fascinating speech.
It's an interesting question. Then you talk about wealth. Once you say wealth, there's a bunch of things to discuss there. I mean, wealth is J.D. Rockefeller, right? Do we envision that the few will corner the market? It seems to me that the energy revolution is so diversified, the clean energy technologies, that it's unlikely that some single or even a few people will be able to corral it the way, say, the fossil fuel industry was able to. Right? So when you say wealth, I mean, everyone wants a piece of that wealth. Everyone wants a job, which is great. But I mean, who's going to be the Rockefeller?
That's a very, very, very good point. And even though he didn't really put it in these terms, if you think about it, I think you can make a case that potentially the best remedy to income inequality is clean energy, because clean energy can be democratized. Clean energy really can't be you know, monopolized,
vertically integrated, as they say,
or controlled,
right?
In that way. So in fact, you know, clean energy can. Because it's something that you know theoretically anybody can get into, it can be something that can really try to reduce the economic inequality that so many people have pointed to as a pressing problem in the United States. So
I agree. When you talk about the wealth creation, sort of the economic opportunity, I mean, you can imagine that across India and Africa, I mean, people are going to have to get paid to maintain, if nothing else, to maintain the wind turbines, right?
Yes.
And to build them. And so there's that. But then the idea that, you know, in vast swaths of the world, even a little bit of electricity is an enormous – benefit in terms of living standards, right? And probably then in economic follow through, right? The consequences are so enormous, and I think it's even more than just energy per se, right? Because now if you have a light on at night, you can study and you can make stuff to sell, right? I
mean, exactly. And he, again, he didn't touch upon this, but if you think about it, you know, maybe this sounds a bit too utopian, but if you think about it, clean energy could at least could potentially put us on our put us on a path worldwide to quite literally the end of poverty.
Yeah,
if you think about that.
No, it's absolutely true. I mean, the amount of improvement of having a minimum amount of energy, and if you don't need to build a nuclear power plant, I mean, you see these things where the soccer ball has a little energy generator in it. So the kids play soccer all day, they bring it home, plug it in, and they got light at night. Right? I mean, that's but even in the U.S., I mean, there are industries, there's all kinds of second-tier industries. You know, you think, oh, there's a, you can get a job building a wind turbine or a job installing a wind turbine, but then there's all kinds of engineering jobs, data management. The whole utility grid has to be rebuilt. I mean, there's so many opportunities for people to make money and to do it right that I think Kerry's on the right track. It is trillions of dollars of economic benefit, and the question is, you know, do you think we're going to get there, DR?
I think so. If people push for it and fight for it and work for it and call for it and vote for it and agitate for it, sure, you can get there.
I heard a guy. I think his name was Frederick something. What did that guy say? Frederick Douglass. What did he say?
Power concedes nothing without a demand.
Yes, there you go. All right. Well, DR, thank you for telling us about these rather important things. I'm glad that Secretary Kerry's on the case. What we'll do is we'll put up links to these things on the blog associated with the podcast. That blog will be at massclimateaction.net/blog, which makes sense, right? That's where you would go looking for a blog at Mass Climate Action. You can find us on Facebook. It's / Mass Climate Action. Please share us so that your friends can listen to us as well. They have these little emotional icons now.
The emojis, yeah.
The little emojis. So please put some jump up and down happy emojis when you share us with your friends. Listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. And, of course, you can get us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close where we always close the DR by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's a patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon, or should I say economic parameters on energy development. Anyway, put a price on carbon. So, DR, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We're so glad you could be with us, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.